There was actually one really funny one. She began scrolling through her phone.
May, please, I'm asking you not to read it.
Here it is. All those poor deer antlers died for this shit?
May, I ask you not to read me that.
What? It was funny.
How can I ask you not to do that in a way where you'll respect my wishes?
This was the Mercer May remembered and couldn't stand. Prickly, moody, high-handed. What are you talking about?
Mercer took a deep breath, and May knew he was about to give a speech. If there was a podium before him, he'd be stepping up to it, removing his papers from his sport coat pocket. 2 years of community college, and he thought he was some kind of professor. He'd given her speeches about organically sourced beef, about the early work of King Crimson, and each time it started with this deep breath, a breath that said, "Settle in, this will take a while and will blow your mind."
May, I have to ask you to... I know, you want me to stop reading your customer comments. Fine.
No, that's not what I was...
You want me to read them to you?
May, how about if you just let me finish my sentence? Then you'll know what I'm saying. You guessing the end of every one of my sentences is never helpful because you're never right.
But you talk so slow.
I talk normally. You've just gotten impatient.
Okay, go.
But now you're hyperventilating.
I guess I'm just so easily bored by this.
By talking?
By talking in slow motion.
Can I start now? It'll take 3 minutes. Can you give me 3 minutes, May?
Fine.
3 minutes where you won't know what I'm about to say, okay? It will be a surprise.
Okay.
All right.
May?
We have to change how we interact. Every time I see or hear from you, it's through this filter. You send me links, you quote someone talking about me, you say you saw a picture of me on someone's wall. It's always this third-party assault. Even when I'm talking to you face-to-face, you're telling me what some stranger thinks of me. It becomes like we're never alone. Every time I see you, there's 100 other people in the room. You're always looking at me through 100 other people's eyes.
Don't get dramatic about it.
I just want to talk with you directly. Without you bringing in every other stranger in the world who might have an opinion about me.
I don't do that.
You do, May. A few months ago, you read something about me, and remember this? When I saw you, you were so standoffish. That's because they said you were using endangered species for your work.
But I've never done that.
Well, how am I supposed to know that? You can ask me. Actually ask me. You know how weird that is? That you, my friend and ex-girlfriend, gets her information about me from some random person who's never met me? And then I have to sit across from you and it's like we're looking at each other through this strange fog.
Fine. Sorry.
Will you promise me to stop doing this?
Stop reading online?
I don't care what you read, but when you and I communicate, I want to do it directly. You write to me, I write to you. You ask me questions, and I answer them. You stop getting news about me from third parties.
But Mercer, you run a business. You need to participate online. These are your customers, and this is how they express themselves and how you know if you're succeeding.
May's mind churned through a half dozen circle tools she knew would help his business. But Mercer was an underachiever who somehow managed to be smug about it.
See, that's not true, May. It's not true. I know I'm successful if I sell chandeliers. If people order them, then I make them, and they pay me money for them.
If they have something to say afterward, they can call me or write me. I mean, all this stuff you're involved in, it's all gossip. It's people talking about each other behind their backs. That's the vast majority of this social media, all these reviews, all these comments. Your tools have elevated gossip, hearsay, and conjecture to the level of valid mainstream communication. And besides that, it's fucking dorky.
May exhaled through her nostrils.
I love it when you do that, he said. Does that mean you have no answer?
Listen, 20 years ago, it wasn't so cool to have a calculator watch, right? And spending all day inside playing with your calculator watch sent a clear message that you weren't doing so well socially. And judgments like and dislike and smiles and frowns were limited to junior high. Someone would write a note and it would say, "Do you like unicorns and stickers?" And you'd say, "Yeah, I like unicorns and stickers. Smile." That kind of thing. But now, it's not just junior high kids who do it. It's everyone. And it seems to me sometimes I've entered some inverted zone, some mirror world where the dorkiest shit in the world is completely dominant. The world has dorkified itself.
Mercer, is it important to you to be cool?
Do I look like it is?
He passed a hand over his expanding stomach, his torn fatigues.
Clearly, I'm no master of cool, but I remember when you'd see John Wayne or Steve McQueen, and you'd say, wow, those guys are badass. They ride horses and motorcycles and wander the earth righting wrongs.
May couldn't help but laugh. She saw the time on her phone. It's been more than 3 minutes.
Mercer plowed on. Now the movie stars beg people to follow their Zing feeds. They send pleading messages asking everyone to smile at them. And holy fuck, the mailing lists? Everyone's a junk mailer. You know how I spend an hour every day thinking of ways to unsubscribe to mailing lists without hurting anyone's feelings? There's this new neediness. It pervades everything.
He sighed as if he'd made some very important points.
It's just a very different planet.
It's different in a good way, May said. There are 1,000 ways it's better, and I can list them, but I can't help it if you're not social. I mean, your social needs are so minimal.
It's not that I'm not social. I'm social enough, but the tools you guys create actually manufacture unnaturally extreme social needs. No one needs the level of contact you're purveying. It improves nothing. It's not nourishing. It's like snack food. You know how they engineer this food? They scientifically determine precisely how much salt and fat they need to include to keep you eating. You're not hungry. You don't need the food. It does nothing for you, but you keep eating these empty calories. This is what you're pushing. Same thing. Endless empty calories, but the digital social equivalent. And you calibrate it so it's equally addictive.
Oh, Jesus.
You know how you finish a bag of chips and you hate yourself? You know you've done nothing good for yourself? That's the same feeling. And you know it is, after some digital binge. You feel wasted and hollow and diminished.
I never feel diminished.
May thought of the petition she'd signed that day to demand more job opportunities for immigrants living in the suburbs of Paris. It was energizing and would have impact. But Mercer didn't know about this, or anything May did, anything the Circle did, and she was too sick of him to explain it all.
And it's eliminated my ability to just talk to you.
He was still talking.
I mean, I can't send you emails because you immediately forward them to someone else. I can't send you a photo because you post it on your own profile. And meanwhile, your company is scanning all of our messages for information they can monetize. Don't you think this is insane?
May looked at his fat face. He was thickening everywhere. He seemed to be developing jowls. Could a man of 25 already have jowls? No wonder snack food was on his mind.
Thanks for helping my dad, she said,
and went inside and waited for him to leave. It took him a few minutes to do so. He insisted on finishing his beer, but soon enough, he did. And May turned out the downstairs lights, went to her old room, and dropped herself into her bed. She checked her messages, found a few dozen that needed her attention, and then, because it was only 9 o'clock and her parents were already asleep, she logged onto her Circle account and handled a few dozen queries, feeling, with every fulfilled request, that she was cleaning the Mercer off of herself. By midnight, she felt reborn. On Saturday, May woke in her old bed, and after breakfast, she sat with her father, the two of them watching women's professional basketball, something he'd taken to doing with great enthusiasm. They wasted the rest of the day playing cards and running errands, and together cooked a chicken sauté dish her parents had learned at a cooking class they'd taken at the Y. On Sunday morning, the routine was the same. May slept in, feeling leaden and feeling good about it, and wandered into the TV room, where her father was again watching some WNBA game. This time, he was wearing a thick white robe a friend of his had pilfered from a Los Angeles hotel. Her mother was outside, using duct tape to repair a plastic garbage can that raccoons had damaged while trying to extract its contents. May was feeling dull-witted, her body reluctant to do anything but recline. She had been, she realized, on constant alert for a full week and hadn't slept more than 5 hours on any given night. Simply sitting in her parents' dim living room, watching this basketball game, which meant nothing to her, all those ponytails and braids leaping, all that squeaking of sneakers, was restorative and sublime.
"You think you can help me up, Sweet Pea?"
her father asked. His fists were deep in the couch, but he couldn't lift himself. The cushions were too deep. May got up and reached for his hand, but when she did, she heard a faint liquid sound.
Mother bastard,
he said, and began to sit down again. Then he adjusted his trajectory and leaned on his side, as if he just remembered there was something fragile he couldn't sit on.
Can you get your mother?
He asked, his teeth clenched, his eyes closed. What's wrong? May asked. He opened his eyes, and there was an unfamiliar fury in them.
Please just get your mother.
I'm right here. Let me help, she said. She reached for his hand again. He swatted her away.
Get your mother!
And then the smell hit her. He'd soiled himself. He exhaled loudly, composing himself. Now with a softer voice, he said,
Please, please, dear, get Mom.
May ran to the front door. She found her mother by the garage and told her what had happened. May's mother did not rush inside. Instead, she held May's hands in her own. I think you better head back now, she said. He won't want you to see this. I can help, May said. Please, honey. You have to grant him some dignity.
Bonnie!
His voice boomed from inside the house. May's mother grabbed her hand. May, sweetie, just get your stuff and we'll see you in a few weeks, okay? May drove back to the coast, her body shaking with rage. They had no right to do that, to summon her home and then cast her out. She didn't want to smell his shit. She would help, yes, anytime she was asked, but not if they treated her that way. And Mercer, he was scolding her in her own house. Jesus Christ, the three of them. May had driven 2 hours there and now was driving two back. And what had she gotten for all this work? Just frustration. At night, lectures from fat men, and during the day, shooed away by her own parents. By the time she got back to the coast, it was 4:14. She had time, she thought. Did the place close at 5 or 6? She couldn't remember. She swerved off the highway and toward the marina. When she got to the beach, the gate to the kayak storage areas was open, but there was no one in sight. May looked around, between the rows of kayaks and paddles and life preservers. Hello? She said.
Hello?
A voice said.
Over here in the trailer.
Behind the rows of equipment, there was a trailer on cinder blocks, and through the open door, May could see a man's feet on a desk, a phone cord stretching from a desk unit to an unseen face. She walked up the steps, and in the darkened trailer, she saw a man in his 30s, balding, holding his index finger up to her. May checked her phone for the time every few minutes, seeing the minutes slip away. 4:20, 4:21, 4:23. When he was off the phone, he smiled.
Thanks for your patience. How can I help?
Is Marion around?
No, I'm her son, Walt.
He stood and shook May's hand. He was tall, thin, sunburned.
Nice to meet you. Am I too late?
Too late for what? Dinner?
He said, thinking he'd made a joke.
To rent a kayak.
Oh, well, what time is it? I haven't checked in a while.
She didn't have to check. 4:26, she said. He cleared his throat and smiled.
4:26, eh? Well, we usually close at 5, but seeing as you're so good with time, I bet I can trust you to bring it back at 5:22. You think that's fair? That's when I have to leave to pick up my daughter.
Thank you, May said.
Let's get you set up, he said. We just digitized our system. You said you have an account?
May gave him her name, and he typed it into a new tablet, but nothing registered. After 3 tries, he realized his Wi-Fi wasn't working.
Maybe I can check you in on my phone, he said, taking it from his pocket.
Can we do it when I come back? May asked, and he agreed, thinking it would give him time to bring the network back up. He set May up with a life preserver and kayak, and when she was out on the water, she checked her phone again. 4:32. She had almost an hour. On the bay, an hour was always plenty. An hour was a day. She paddled out, and this day saw no harbor seals in the marina, though she dawdled purposely to try to draw them out. She made her way over to the old half-sunken pier, where they sometimes sun themselves, but found none. There were no harbor seals, no sea lions. The pier was empty, a sole filthy pelican sitting atop a post. She paddled beyond the tidy yachts, beyond the mystery ships and into the open bay. Once there, she rested, feeling the water beneath her, smooth and undulating, like gelatin fathoms deep. As she sat, unmoving, a pair of heads appeared 20 yards in front of her. They were harbor seals and were looking at each other, as if deciding whether they should look at May in unison, which they presently did. They stared at each other, the two seals and May, no one blinking until, as if realizing how uninteresting May was, just some figure unmoving, one seal leaned into a wave and disappeared, and the second seal quickly followed. Ahead, halfway into the bay, she saw something new, a man-made shape she hadn't noticed before, and decided that would be her task that day, to make her way to the shape and investigate. She paddled closer and saw that the shape was actually two vessels, an ancient fishing boat tethered to a small barge. On the barge, there was an elaborate but jerry-rigged sort of shelter. If this existed anywhere on land, especially around here, it would be dismantled immediately. It looked like pictures she'd seen of Hooverville or some makeshift refugee settlement. May was sitting, squinting at the mess of it, when, from under a blue tarpaulin, a woman emerged.
"Oh, hey," the woman said. "You came out of nowhere."
She was about 60, with long white hair, full and frayed, pulled into a ponytail. She took a few steps forward, and May saw that she was younger than she'd assumed, maybe early 50s, her hair streaked with blonde.
"Hi," May said. "Sorry if I'm getting too close. The people in the marina make a point of telling us not to disturb you guys out here."
"Usually that's the case," the woman said. "But seeing as we're coming out to have our evening cocktail," she said as she settled into a plastic white chair, "your timing is impeccable."
She craned her head back, speaking to the blue tarpaulin.
"You gonna hide in there?"
"Getting a drink, lovebird,"
a male voice said, his form still invisible, his voice straining to be polite. The woman turned back to May. In the low light, her eyes were bright, a bit wicked.
"You seem harmless. You want to come aboard?"
She tilted her head, assessing May. May paddled closer, and when she did, the male voice emerged from under the tarpaulin and took on human form. It was leathery, a bit older than his companion, and he moved slowly, getting out of the boat and onto the barge. He was carrying what appeared to be two thermoses.
"Is she joining us?"
the man asked the woman, dropping himself into the matching plastic chair next to hers.
"I asked her to,"
the woman said. When May was close enough to make out their faces, she could see they were clean, tidy. She'd feared their clothing would confirm what their vessel implied, that they were not just waterborne vagabonds, but dangerous, too. For a moment, the couple watched as May maneuvered her way to their barge, curious about her, but passive, as if this was their living room and she their night's entertainment.
"Well, help her,"
the woman said testily, and the man stood. The bow of May's kayak knocked against the steel edge of the barge, and the man quickly tied a rope around it and pulled the kayak so it was parallel. He helped her up and onto the surface, a patchwork of wooden planks.
"Sit here, honey,"
the woman said, indicating the chair he'd vacated to help her. May sat down and caught the man giving the woman a wild look.
"Well, get another one,"
the woman said to him, and he disappeared again under the blue tarp.
"I don't usually boss him around so much,"
she said to May, reaching for one of the thermoses he'd set down.
"But he doesn't know how to entertain. You want red or white?"
May had no reason to accept either in the middle of the afternoon, when she had the kayak to return and then the drive home, but she was thirsty. And if the wine was white, it would be so good under the afternoon's low sun. And quickly, she decided she wanted some. "White, please," she said. A small red stool appeared from the folds of the tarpaulin, followed by the man, making a show of looking put out.
Just sit and have a drink.